please support him and Radio Albion, because they let us stream live on their platform every week. Now, I say this every week, and I always get messages asking the same question. Where's last week's episode of PWR? Well, where all previous episodes of PWR are located. Now, every one of my previous videos is also there in its uncensored form. BitChute, free speech platform. Get yourself over there. Make sure you sub to me. Make sure you're supporting myself, Neil Woes, who's just disappeared for some reason, and No White Guilt over on BitChute as well. And Millennial Woes is back. I think he's having a few graphics card problems.
I am now, indeed, but I had to refresh. So there we are.
Well, he is back. Now, you can contribute to the show by either giving us a financial contribution or by asking questions by using Entropy. Now, the Entropy link is over on my Twitter. It is on my Telegram. It is in the link in the description. And also, it is now in the live chat too. Entropy is a place where you can make donations. It's also a place where you can ask questions. The best questions are voted up, and we answer the best questions every week and read out all super chats. If you would like to make a financial contribution in other ways, the best way is Bitcoin. Please, if you can donate via Bitcoin, my preferred way of receiving donations, because PayPal don't like me. And even though I never shared my PayPal, they shut me down anyway. If you want to email me, you can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. You can ask for help. You can ask for ways to get involved with Patriotic Alternative. And I'm always here to listen to what people have to say. So if you want to reach me, that is the best place. If you try to message me on Twitter and on Facebook and places like that, sometimes I miss them. I get loads of messages. They go into multiple junk mail folders. So the best place is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, we've got lots of things to discuss tonight. We are going to discuss the coronavirus lockdown. We've already spoke a lot about the coronavirus, but we are edging towards a bizarre police state. And this police state is basically almost a test for how far the government can push things. We are being quarantined. We have police and military on the streets of some cities. Very, very interesting times. And obviously, you're willing, you know, if you wish, you can share your stories with us through Entropy about what you've been up during the quarantine. I've just heard the terrible news that where I get my hair, they've just texted me where I get my haircut. They've just texted me. There's no more haircuts. So maybe people would like to vote on what Mark should do with his hair. Should he A, attempt to cut it himself, B, attempt to let his missus cut it for him, or C, shave it all off? There is also D, which is just let it grow into a mess, but that will start irritating me. But harsh times call for
or E, you could get a wig.
That'd be even more annoying than just long hair, I think. I can't cope. I can't cope with hair over my ear. It'd just be irritating. Now, we do have lots of things to discuss. Obviously, coronavirus is one of them. The second thing is the meltdowns in the Tommy camp. We've seen Tommy. He's on the streets punching people. We've seen his right-hand man, the thug Glenn Saffer, getting arrested outside was it Tesco's or Sainsbury's, begging to be arrested, then crying like a big girl when they handcuffed him. Very, very amusing, all kind of EastEnders nationalism. It seems that everyone who wants to make a name for themselves today is begging to get arrested. We'll discuss all of that and more later. And interestingly, whilst Patriotic Weekly Review is in full swing, apparently, Paul Golding and Britain First are holding their own weekly stream at the same time. And their topic tonight is demographics and the way that Britain's ethnic makeup has been changing. So I suppose imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. Good luck, Paul. And I hope that you're slowly waking up to the real issues that are affecting our people. The Overton window is shifting every day, my friends, and Patriotic Alternative, the UK Groypers, and all of the people in our wonderful PWR community, thank you so much for helping to shift things in our direction. People who were once absolutely committed to never mentioning demographics, never mentioning race, only talking about civic nationalist issues or Islam, they are now being forced to adopt our talking points and are even doing special shows to address it. So thank you, Paul. And I hope that you're awakening to the big issues affecting the people of European descent continues on until you understand all the great issues that we discuss. So anyway, that's the intro for the night. And now I'll introduce, as always, No White Guilt. Jason, my friend, what have you been up to this week? And who's on tap? Who's on the after party?
Well, the after party is going to be on Friday. We're going to have a magnificent time over on my channel. And we will let everybody know who's going to be on and exactly what time. But Friday evening, Eastern Standard Time at some point. And of course, the pretenders like Golding are going to come scurrying out and try to claim that they have some opinion, some sentiments that are akin to ours. Please don't leave the work that we are doing over here for nothing, to make sure that your land remains anti-white and multiracial so that diseases can continue to pour into your lands. Of course, everyone must know at this point that the UK would be in much better state if people like Mark Collett were in charge of protecting the people and our futures against the ravages of the world and the sewers of the world. But of course, they're not. We're not going to see the resolve that we have seen in the past in the British population, nor are we going to see it in the population here in the United States. In fact, with all of these anti-white, non-whites emptying the shelves, everything is getting infinitely worse here. And here, indeed, in the fair state of Virginia, they have closed the barbershops. So that's why I'm kidding. The camera, I'm having a bit of a camera malfunction, but I hope to have it fixed by the end of the show. Fortunately, I'm not a black female on the verge of having a wardrobe malfunction, but one never knows given the state of things. But I am absolutely excited to be here with all of you, whether the camera is working or not. And the great Millennial Woes, of course, I can't say enough about him. And let's get right into the show. I pass it back, good brother.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you. Now, over to our special guest, who is none other than the fantastic Millennial Woes, fresh back from his absolutely incredible speech at the Patriotic Alternative Conference. Now, I've got to hand it to Woes. Not only did he give a fantastic speech at the recent conference, but he turned up in trousers, a shirt, and a tie. The progress this man is making is phenomenal. He is losing the weight. He looks far better for it. And his speech was hilarious. You see, Colin has a gift that not many people have. He can talk about deeply personal issues, be very, very honest with the audience, but do so in an amusing way, which isn't forced, it doesn't feel cringy. And I think to be able to share time with somebody who can do that is really a privilege. And he certainly lit up the conference when he gave his speech. There was highs, there was lows, there was laughter. And at the end, there was a very, very uplifting message. But I think Colin really is somebody that we can all take an immense amount of hope from, because when you look at how far Colin's come in the last half a decade, it's incredible. But look why he went on this journey. He discovered nationalism. Colin is the living proof that nationalism is good for our people, that nationalism saves young men and puts them on a path to redemption. And now he has done the ultimate good. He is now helping other young men to adopt nationalism and find their own path to redemption. Millennial Woes, hello, my friend. Please introduce yourself. Tell us where we can find you, what you're up to, a bit about your recent streams. Tell us about your experience at the conference. And of course, tell us how we can contribute to your excellent work.
Right, well, hello. Thank you for inviting me on. You can find me on, I've got the Millennial Woes channel on YouTube. I've got the MW Live channel on YouTube, where I do a weekly AMA every Sunday at about 10 p.m. YouTube aren't sharing that any, they're not notifying people of that anymore. So you might want to subscribe to my Telegram channel, which is just Millennial Woes. And there I keep people up to date with everything that I'm doing. You wanted me to talk about the conference and the speech. I think that, well, and okay, so the conference was really, it was interesting because I've talked about it on several streams already. It felt much more like the inaugural conference rather than the first one. You know, it's like the Terminator versus Terminator 2. You know, the Terminator was kind of low budget. It's very good. It's actually my favorite of the series. But it's everyone thinks of T2, you know, like this much bigger thing. And so the conference last 10 days ago really felt like the start, whereas the one in September felt like a sort of dress rehearsal. And that's not to denigrate it in any way. But it really felt to me like I kind of regretted the speech I gave, actually, because I thought it ended up not being appropriate, because I think a better one, a better topic would have been just more general, what can we do and what should we do and what is the point of all this? However, the speech I did give was about masculinity, femininity, the dynamic between the sexes, and the need for self-improvement and why it is that white men specifically have been attacked and undermined for the last 70 years. So, and I want to, in the next conference, give a follow-up speech to this one where I talk about solutions and, you know, what I've personally done. And actually, I'm a bit thwarted just now because my swimming pool, the local swimming pool, has shut because of the coronavirus. So I'm looking for ways to avoid becoming a big fat blob again before the lockdown ends. So, yeah, it definitely is. I mean, yes, the doing the channel, I've been doing it for 6 years now, and it has been a journey, as people say. But what I want is just to become as sort of self-sufficient and healthy and constructive as possible. Because I think for right-wingers, it's often very easy to be problem finders and analyze problems and so on. But it's much more difficult for us to be solution finders. But I think we have to become that. So that's what I would say about that. As for how people can support me, I think that was the last thing you asked about. I'm on Subscribestar, I'm on Ko-fi, and all the ways that you can support me can be found at millennialwoes.com/donate. So that's where they all are. So yeah, I don't know what else I've forgotten. You asked me about a fourth thing, but I've forgotten what it was.
Well, it was just a... So generally introduce yourself, say what you've been up to. I know you've been doing some AMAs on Sunday night. I never get notified of those, but usually I'm in bed asleep anyway because I'm an old man now. So
my bed's yeah, I think Telegram is so important for us at this stage. I mean, I, as everyone knows, I'm not on Twitter. I lost that account a year and a half ago, so I can't notify people on there anymore. I did, my friend, my assistant, had an account on there, Woes PA, but it got shut down about a month ago, so I can't advertise on there either. And now it looks like YouTube are, because of the coronavirus, they're stepping up the automated censorship, and part of that is to not notify people of streams. So I only had on the recent one last Sunday, the Sunday night a few nights ago, I only had half the usual number of viewers because they weren't getting notified. I mean, it's infuriating, but of course, as people often say, what else can we expect? Obviously, these platforms are going to work against us. So it's not surprising. And we shouldn't be sort of baffled or outraged by this. We should be looking for constructive ways to circumvent it. And as I keep saying, Telegram is one such way. So I urge people to get onto Telegram. If not to communicate with other people, then just to keep abreast of things. Because everyone who has a Twitter account also has a Telegram account that is in much less danger of being shut down.
Well, thank you. Well, let's get on to some of the big issues then. Let's talk about coronavirus. How's it affecting everyone? I mean, for me, I'm actually not really too affected. I moved to the countryside. I don't live too far from a large supermarket. We had a little bit of food, a few cans, a little bit in the freezer. So we thought we've got a few reserves. But generally speaking, I've been driving to the supermarket between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. every day, buying what I need for the day or for the next couple of days, then going a couple of days later. So it's not really affected me too much. And in the afternoons now, obviously my non-political work has more or less dried up, as you can expect it would with all this happening. And that's a bit unfortunate. But in the time that I have spare now in the afternoons, I can't go to the gym. So what do I do? Well, on one hand, I've had a lot of work to do because I've got to say a huge thank you to Way of the World. He did a really, really lovely video about the PA conference. And we had over 1,000 people sign up to the PA website the other day. So that was quite a bit of work going through all that and sorting all that. But also, we've been taking Sophia out every afternoon for a little walk. So, you know, an hour and a half out in the sunshine, just a walk to different places in the countryside. And life seems to have slowed down. But one thing I've noticed, which is actually quite nice, is when we go on our walks, it's great to see other families now. We see so many other families, other couples doing the same. And one of the real positives, because I know we talk about the negatives of the quarantine and the social effects it might have, the fact we might end up going to a cashless society. And we can talk about all the negatives in a minute. This section is more about how we're dealing with it. I will say it does seem to have had some nice effects on people. Today, when we were walking out of our little estate, there was a family and they were sat in their front garden in the sun with their dog playing Scrabble. Well, that's nice. You know, we saw couples out on their mountain bikes with their children. We saw...
I like the idea that the dog was playing Scrabble with
them. the dog wasn't playing. The dog itself wasn't playing Scrabble. Sort of sat there enjoying the sun. But it is all quite nice. And there are a lot of negatives about what's happening. But it is nice to see families spending a little bit of quality time and going out into the countryside and going for walks and getting a little bit of exercise. I think, you know, a lot of clouds have silver linings. So Jason and Colin, what are your thoughts? How are you dealing with the quarantine? Then let's talk about some of the negatives.
Woz, would you like to jump in there first?
Well, I've written some notes, actually, because I was thinking about doing a proper video about the coronavirus, but I'm not sure. The way I tend to handle topics, at least just now, is that I talk about them on the AMA and then cut those bits out and put them up on the main channel. It seems to be working quite well so far. But anyway, I do have some notes about the coronavirus. And as for how it's affecting me, it's only just starting now. And I'm worried about how bad it's going to get. Because, you know, obviously at the start, it's a bit of a novelty. And even the people who resent it can at least find some, novel experience in it. But eventually it's going to become a real drag. It's going to become, I'm sorry to be a pessimist about this, but it's going to become really annoying. And actually, I think that when the summer comes, it's going to be a huge relief for people. I think to get out into the sunshine in the summer is going to be fantastic. Because, I mean... who knows how long we're going to be shut up for. I know that in Britain, they're saying it's going to be for at least 3 weeks and they'll review it in 3 weeks from now. There's odds are, I think they'll probably extend it beyond that. I think we'll probably be indoors. This lockdown will probably last 5 or 6 weeks, I think. If nothing else, this is something that I think we're all going to remember for the rest of our lives. This is going to be something quite unique in our lifetimes. I've certainly never lived through something like this. And it's going to be interesting. But as for how it's affecting, as I say, it's only just starting. Everything is slowing down. Like, deliveries don't happen. I mean, I ordered something on Amazon the other day and it said it was going to take a month to arrive. So, because they're obviously prioritizing, you know, important stuff and necessities and so on. So, everything is strange just now. And I went out into the into London a few nights ago and with a friend just as the lockdown was beginning. And it was, you know, there were bits like Piccadilly Circus was virtually deserted. It was like a ghost town. It was really interesting. You know, from a sort of artistic point of view, it was ominous, haunting, you know. Trafalgar Square as well. I think there were only one other... a couple who were there. So it's very strange just now. And I think it's going to be interesting. I don't know what else to say about it. Everything else is so uncertain. Like, why this is happening, where it originated, or why it originated. Is it being exaggerated? Is it as genuine and huge a threat as they're saying, but the changes necessary are going to be undesirable, or are they going to be desirable changes? Dependence on China, for example, for medicine, that's surely going to be reduced from now on. It has shown up the real frailty, the vulnerabilities that globalism creates, like relying on so much travel, relying on global transportation, relying on countries that might well decide that they don't like you at any time, but you need them to provide morphine for the hospitals or whatever. You know, this kind of thing has always been insane, and nationalists have always been saying that it's insane, and now suddenly there is this stone-cold proof of it.
Yeah, well, there are so many opportunities here. Of course, there are challenges, and this is one of the things that I've continually talked about. Thank you, actually, for your thoughts there, Woz, prescient as always. But this is one of the things that I've talked about and will continue to talk about, and that is that we need to grow in our numbers, in our connectivity, in our liquidity, in our intelligence, in our ability to project our information, our truth, the reality of the world to our brothers and sisters around the world, because there will be societal context shifting events. Now, once we grow large enough in all of those things I just named, we will have the ability to put our shoulder into the societal context and help to shift it in ways that present us with opportunities heretofore we can't even imagine, challenges as well. And nonetheless, there will be these scenarios, things that I've named over the past several years on YouTube, things like pandemics that will present us with great opportunities to reach our people because of things like what Woz was just talking about, the uncertainty that it causes in people. And this is most profoundly felt by our women. And it is our women that have been largely turned against us, irrespective of all of the great heroines we have in our midst. By far and large, our women have been turned against us, and therefore our households turned against us. Woz talked about that at the conference, and when he has his speech up, you all are going to absolutely relish watching that because it's so insightful. But it is, let me just say, a lot of opportunities right now that we are not able to take advantage of because we don't have the strength and the numbers, et cetera, to be able to do so. So this should be fuel for us for the future to remember that there are context-shifting events. They do come along, and they can change things radically. Often, they will change things radically in favor of what is already afoot. And so as though you have the ball of snow rolling down the hill and it gains momentum, the steeper things get. But there are also opportunities. There are new gullies. There are trees in the way. There are all of these sorts of things that we need to be positioned to be able to take opportunity of. Now, we have some ideas. For example, a great proof of these the opportunity presented to us is, and what we were just stating, is the fact that YouTube and these other platforms have gone into overdrive. Now, they're not just going into overdrive of their censorship just because anti-whites feel like it's the best thing to do, or they just felt like flipping the dial up a bit for the heck of it. It's because the anti-white elites in the government know that this is the kind of thing that causes people to look elsewhere. And these can be lifelong changes. They'll remember the trauma of the fear, not being able to go to the grocery store. When they do, the shelves are empty, not being able to go out, not being able to go to work, hearing about that person that they know and love who comes down with the disease and is harmed irrevocably by the disease. These are traumatic events that can cause people for the totality of their life to look elsewhere for leadership, for guidance, etc. And we have to be there with our voices. The anti-whites are making clear to us that they are fearful of folks hearing what we have to say because they know that they will lose control over their minds. So what can we do? What can you do? It would be very easy to make little leaflets that say, why are we not allowed to do X, Y, or Z? Why do we have to be afraid? Why are we losing our rights? Why is our country going down the drain? Why don't we have the resolve that we used to have when we were a people, a single country and a single people? go to these websites and then to take these leaflets and just drop them in the places that people are going to be looking for their supplies that are going to be not very widely available, even though in great demand. So things like the grocery store, the hardware store, all of these sorts of places. This should not, and then I'll pass it back to Mark so we can keep things rolling along. This should not create a scenario where you want to hunker down and climb into a shell, because just remember, folks, your well-being is only going to be achievable by way of our group's well-being. There is no individual hyper-individualism here that is going to save you. For all of those people out there that think, well, I bought tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of prepping gear and X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to be just fine. Know this. Unless, first of all, you're selfish as all hell, and any man that would secure a heaven for himself and hell for his people is someone we are not going to be including in the future that we create for our sons and daughters, a destiny reclaimed, a destiny that you will not be a part of. But know this, unless you bought all of that stuff in cash and in person, the governments of our country know exactly who you are. And when they decide, if they decide that there's going to be a redistribution of goods and food and all of this sorts of things, they're going to come to your house first and saying that, well, I ate it all up, or I lost that filtration device, or all of these sorts of things, isn't going to be good enough, because they're going to haul your ass off to the corona-plagued prison for not turning over the material that they know you purchased with your credit cards, that they know you were looking at online, all of these prepping websites that you were a member of. So if you think you're going to escape just by being a selfish loser, then you are not, my friends. Instead, we need to come together as a people, as a collective, to secure our individual well-being, or there will be no well-being. Rest assured that there are no non-whites out there, no non-whites out there, that are saying to themselves, just me, screw the rest of my people. They know instinctually that it is their individual well-being that is achieved by way of their group's well-being, and we are going to have to shed these selfish individuals if we are going to make a future for ourselves. I pass it over to our great leader, Mark Collett.
So let's just really briefly just discuss what we think some of the more nefarious changes are going to be. Because we've all said that was meant to be what we're doing. Jason went slightly there. And also, don't go out and put any leaflets out. I've just got to disagree with Jason there. The last thing I want anyone to do is put out a leaflet or something and give the virus to someone else. I'm certainly not telling anyone to put out leaflets or to spread the virus. So just want to make that double clear. There are some very foolish people who have been suggesting that we sort of break the curfew and go out handing out food parcels. Please, please don't do anything that could pass on the virus or get yourself arrested or paint us as essentially doing something that has compromised others, because that's how it will play out. We need to all be in an absolutely great position when all this dies down, because when this dies down, you're going to see a massive backlash against the globalist system. You're going to see people who have lost their mothers, their fathers, their grandparents, maybe even sons and daughters, and they'll be asking, why? There are going to be people who've lost their businesses, people who lose their homes because of mortgage foreclosures. There are going to be people out there who have been sacked and treated terribly by the capitalist system. There's going to be people who've worked for companies for 10, 15 years who were just let go. I mean, look at that vile Philip Green, Sir Philip Green, no prizes for guessing what tribe he comes from. And apparently, allegedly, despite him being a billionaire, all of his staff, or many of them, have allegedly been sacked. This was reported by the Daily Mail. Now, if that's true, and you've got a billionaire sacking loyal members of staff in a time of need, people are going to be asking questions why this happened. And the answer to all of these people's problems is nationalism. So I don't want to see anyone do anything crazy. I don't want to see anyone going out breaking the law. We'll be talking about lawbreakers of the funny kind in a minute. make sure you're legal, make sure you're safe, because when this all ends, that is our time to spread the truth. And the truth is, this virus is only here because of globalism, open borders, and mass immigration and multiculturalism. It's only here because people like Boris Johnson want to keep airports open because GDP. And that's why people's mums and dads will be dying. That's why people will lose their grandparents, maybe even lose children, because GDP is the new god and economics is the new religion. And I can see two different groups emerging on the right. There is one group which seems quite selfish, libertarian style, really. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, who cares? Who cares if this happens to certain people? We can't sacrifice the economy because that'd be terrible. Then there's other people saying, gosh, have we really put the economy and money above our own parents, above our own people? And that second group are the ones we need to be reaching out to. But I've got a few worries, and I'm just going to throw these out here for discussion. Oh, and Colin, people in the chat are saying, why isn't your speech online? So I hope you're going to use the quarantine to get your speech up online, because people are now very excited to see it. So.
Oh, yes. Yes, I will. I will.
But my big worries are the following. A lot of businesses are saying, well, we would have stayed open, but we'd only be able to take card payments. Are we going to lurch towards a cashless society? My other big worry is this is the biggest lurch towards a police state we've ever seen. And I think Boris, the government, and the deep state will be watching very carefully at how we accept that, whether we push back against that, how we behave. Because it will obviously, that will obviously influence their future decision making. Now, I will also say that this is a bit of a test in terms of how we hold together. And what I mean by that is people who at one point wouldn't have scalped each other, wouldn't have eaten each other alive in a crisis, are now fighting over loo roll. And again, that is very telling and very worrying, and it shows just how far we've fallen. There's some of my observations. There's some of my worries. The cashless society, the fact that our communities might be even more broken than we thought, and also, will this give the government ideas that they can seize even more power? Because one thing's for sure, they're not closing the borders. They're not actually going to prevent air travel from all over the world and start screening people, which is the simple solution and what they should have done. But they may well. What I'm trying to say, let me rephrase that, actually. I was going to say something different, but let's put it like this. The government are far more happy to quarantine you in your home. They're far happier to institute a police state where normal people are being told not to leave their homes and are threatened with arrests and fines if they do leave their homes, than they are to close the airports and give people a little test when they do come back to Britain. So citizens returning would be tested. They're completely unwilling to close the airports and test people, but much more willing to tell everyone to stay in their homes. That is very worrying, and it's very telling what their priorities are and how they view different things. Your freedoms are less important than the globalist, open border, multicultural, money-driven plot. That takes precedent over your freedoms. And don't forget that. So, Colin, is there anything about this that worries you? What are your big worries? What are the things that have happened that have made you think, gosh, that's something we should keep an eye on?
Well, there are so many aspects to it. It's I read that there had been a bailout, I think, in America of $3 trillion. I first read $1.5 trillion and to these corporations, and then I also read $3 trillion, and that this, like, as I understand it, this dwarfs the bailouts that were made in 2008 with the global financial crisis, but. That's only one part of it. Another part of it is, as you said, they wanted to keep open borders and global capitalism going for as long as possible, and they prioritized that over over everything else, the health, survival, and so on. One thing that interested me was a few days ago, there was this spate of, again, American people. I don't have it in for Americans. I'm just, it just happens that it came from America. Commentators, right-wing commentators, saying that they would sacrifice themselves for the good of the economy. Like, they would be prepared to die. There was a guy being interviewed on Tucker Carlson, and he said, "And we over 70s will look after ourselves, and the young people should just get back to life as normal, and basically let us old people take the risk, and maybe we'll perish, but that's good for the economy." And I thought, that is, it's hilarious, but it's also perverse and terrifying to think that in the end, this mentality that we've had ever since, for the last 70 years, that basically the only thing that matters is money, capitalism, materialism, ultimately results in people voluntarily sacrificing themselves for the good of money, for the good of global capital. It's incredible. But it's one of those scary things. I mean, boomers come in for a lot of castigation, but this does seem to be a very boomer notion that basically, I don't want to limit my the financial freedom and the consumer freedom of my fellow citizens to buy and sell freely. So I'll just jump on the pyre and perish. It's amazing, really. But this is what happens, I think, when you don't have a belief in anything but consumerism. When that, you don't have nation, you don't have religion, you don't have race, you don't have peoplehood. The only thing that matters is money. And I think that's one thing that we're going to. I remember Boris Johnson saying similar things in the early days of this, that the strategy was going to be herd immunity. And then they rode back on that a week later when some new report was published, and they realized that not only was that a very unpalatable policy, but it also wasn't a good, realistic policy. But their first thing was, let's look after the economy. And I think that this shows, I think people react badly to this. I think normal people think there's something wrong with a world where we don't matter, where people, cultures, nations, communities don't matter to the government. That has to be, there's something obviously wrong and perverse about that. So that's one thing. I mean, there are other things as well. Again, the uncertainty, the fact that this was, see, no one knows whether this is as bad, as serious as they're saying, as the governments are saying. But what is clear is that the majority of the public are prepared to go along with this. So what that signals is, well, A, people are not actually that averse to authoritarianism, but also that the authority exists in our present governments to get things done when they want to. I mean, remember when they were saying, oh, we can't stop these refugees coming in. That's just impossible. Even in Britain, with its moat, we can't possibly stop it. Well, now they can. When they want to get things done, they can get things done. Now, that's both encouraging and scary, because imagine how efficient they could be against any section of the population if they wanted to be. I think we're probably going to start seeing surveillance. In the next few weeks, we'll probably see people being surveilled in ways that we didn't even know were possible, with an efficiency that we didn't realize had been achieved. But the technology exists. I think that people who venture out, for example, might find themselves being facially recognized by AI and served notices after all this is all over, you know, where you violated the lockdown. I'm not saying, obviously people should behave responsibly. The only reason I'm mentioning this is I think we're going to see just how powerful government has become in this highly technological age. And I think people might be quite shocked. So that's all I've got to say about it, really. It's incredibly, we're in a very transitional period right now, and I think the ways that this is going to affect society, it's probably going to affect it in the long run in major ways, but I also think it's going to just change things immediately. For example, I read an article last night, which, hold on a second, I'll see if I can find it. The guy made the point that all of these authoritarian measures that they're going to make just now are going to make other authoritarian measures seem quite trivial. So, you know, by comparison. So, in other words, the public are being conditioned, possibly, to accept a lot of censorship and control. So, that's what I would say about this.
Well, this is the kind of, well said. In fact, I have some to support what you were saying was they have the conservatives, the patriots in the United States. You still have these, you know, a lot of these older Americans, and their patriotism has been perverted. Their love for country has been perverted into a love of economy, a love of abstraction. And so they end up saying things like Glenn Beck saying that older Americans should return to work, quote, even if we all get sick. I would rather die than kill the country. Well, the country they're talking about there is just the economy. And we can see from the size of the bailout, there are a lot of things that can be determined by the size of it. And it's really not, it's a stimulus package, not necessarily a bailout. And remember, they have the right to print as much money as they want. Governments exist in the jungle of survival. And there are two curves here that the governments of the West are looking at: the curve of the economy and whether or not they can keep it chugging along, at what point it has to be turned back on, no matter what's going on in the population, and the curve of the disease: how many are afflicted, how many are in the hospitals, how many are in the morgues. I would say when it comes to this disease, well, first on the economy issue, they are absolutely going to turn the economies back on before it's too late. There isn't going to be a giant crash. They're not going to allow such a thing to happen. They're going to pump out enough money to ensure that things continue to chug along. I think Trump is saying, and he wants to tie it to the resurrection of Christ, so April 12th, the economy will be turned back on by then in the United States, irrespective of the outcome. They're hoping, I believe, that people will be able to take the steps that we have seen in Italy, where you have folks standing like 8 feet or more apart, social distancing, in a place that's more homogeneous. Some of these Italian towns that are entirely white or nearly entirely white, you can have such a thing take place. But in some place like a heterogeneous, multiracial, anti-white society like the United States, that's simply not going to work. These people will be on top of each other, fighting for goods and services, whatever they might be. And these white, older folks, these boobs, really of any age, patriots, nationalists, conservatives of any age, are going to say it's their duty to step up and sacrifice themselves. Now, there's going to be a lot of signaling, but how many people are actually going to do that, especially as we increasingly have friends, family, et cetera, that are becoming afflicted with the disease, with COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, spreading across the lands, and having seriously deleterious effects on their health. My friend who has COVID-19 has come close to death twice. This is a person in 30s. And healthy, in other words, doesn't have any health conditions that would exacerbate the disease, and yet needed liquid morphine to prevent from going into shock from the pain the virus causes. And the reason there is so much pain is because these cells, there are three different types of cells that the virus can latch onto and invade. And those types of cells exist in the kidneys, liver, lungs, throat, heart, other parts of the body as well. And so it can damage all of these parts of the body while the person is ill. Then needed forced air to prevent a stroke from low oxygen count. Again, otherwise healthy person. And now has discovered from the CAT scans that were done while at the hospital that the person's heart has been damaged and will need medication or, at last resort, a surgery on the heart to prevent from dying. And so the disease is real. The disease is extremely contagious far more contagious than the basic flu. So what I see happening and my fears, and that's essentially what Mark was asking a moment ago, is that the economies of the West are going to be turned back on so that they can continue chugging along. And of course, it'll be our people, our older people, who will be contracting the disease and suffering grievously from it in disproportion to the rest of the population. Certainly, these ballooning non-white youthful populations that continue also to pour into our countries, they can't seem to ever get a handle on that. They could put up, as Woz was saying, drones in the air that are going to fly around and take pictures of our faces if we disobey their laws and their rules, but they somehow can't stop, because of course they want the non-white, anti-whites pouring into the lands. And these young non-white people, what are they going to be doing? They're going to be getting infected. They're going to be suffering very little from the disease. Although we have news here in the United States that we're having children die in some places. They don't know what, if any, comorbidities there were in these cases. It's still an investigation. So there's a lot of investigation to go on. But nonetheless, these people are going to be spreading. Now, here's the thing that I would say. I don't have a big fear about some increasing level of tyrannical control. It's here already in the United States. The Patriot Act gives the United States government the power to do everything that they could possibly imagine to do. And in fact, we had laws on the books before then that allowed the government of the United States, and I'm sure it's the same way across the West, that allowed them to just snatch up citizens that were a threat to the order of the country and disappear them if they wanted. So these laws and the tyranny is already available to the anti-whites. And this is the other thing, is don't get wrapped up in this, you know, quote, they conspiracy nonsense. Ladies and gentlemen, the they are the anti-whites, and you need to call them by their right names, because if we don't call things by their right names, we can't ask the right questions and then get the right answers. So the anti-whites are the problem. Now, there doesn't need to be a scenario where they release a disease intentionally so that they can then snatch up the remaining liberties, of which there are none. So they do, however, different individuals, and this is human dynamism, and it's far more complex than the simplicity that the people who sow these or weave these conspiracy theories together would have you believe. The anti-whites of various degrees and various levels are, of course, going to use every situation to try to advance anti-whiteism. And you can see right now in the bills that they're trying to pass here in the United States to provide funding for these businesses and provide funding for unemployment insurance and provide funding, just direct payments back of our own money back to us in the United States. You see the anti-whites are trying to pass everything from like solar panel credits to anti-white businesses that won't produce a damn thing, windmill credits and money for Planned Parenthood and all of these sorts of things that have nothing to do with what's going on right now. Again, just speaking to the reality that the anti-whites are always going to try to implement everything that they have on the table, their entire wish list. And what is the problem is not with the anti-whites, but it's with people like us. It's with people like us who support these ridiculous parties and groups and organizations that ostensibly stand up for us and our beliefs and our heritage, our history, and yet they have nothing ready. They don't. What they should have is a wish list as well, ready that immediately when something like this goes into play, that they immediately say, defund these anti-white organizations with the next bill. Why aren't there these sorts of bills in place? Repeal the tyranny that is in place. Why isn't there this kind of language sewn into the back or the bottom of the bill every single time for the anti-whites to complain about? No, this will go on for some time. They're going to send us back to work. A lot of people will get sick, and we need to take steps, each and every one of us, to remain healthy so we can do exactly as Mark was saying, which is to go out after this is over and make sure everyone knows exactly why things have gotten worse. Pass it back to you, Mark.
Okay, before we go on to the next topic, there are a couple of amusing... Well, there's one thing that I want to say. We've got a guy in the chat tonight called Jakeson Latte. I did a great interview with him the other day. It's over on his channel. It was really nice to meet him. He's here in the chat today. I just want to say thank you for the interview the other day and thought I'd give him a shout out. And I also want to give a shout out to Barclay Walsh, because for weeks I've had a copy of Doom in the corner of the screen, and so far no one's mentioned it or even noticed it. But eagle-eyed Barclay was like, "Ooh, you've got a copy of Doom in the corner." Indeed I have. Well done, Barclay. I will put something else in the corner next week and see if you can spot what it is. So we're now moving on to the final general topic of discussion before we do the questions and the super chats. Now, the thing I wanted to talk about was this ridiculous let's get arrested nationalism. Now, this has been to a new low over the last few days. We all might have seen Tommy Robinson diving out of his car and punching some youths as he was very annoyed because apparently they'd coughed on some elderly people. Now, I'm certainly not saying young people, especially not those kind of young people, youths, shall we call them? We know what I mean when I say youths. Well, he jumped out of his car and he gave him a bit of a thrashing. Now, to be fair, they probably deserved it. But at the same point, I've said this before, nationalist leaders can't afford to do things like that. We can't afford to constantly be getting arrested. This circus, this cycle of let's get arrested for a bit of publicity and a donation drive is absolutely damaging. It wears our people out. It ties us down in these lengthy court cases. Eventually, people run out of luck and good grace and end up in jail. But I saw the lowest of the low the other day. Now, this guy is called Glenn Saffer, and he is a real foul-mouthed bully. And I didn't say this before the conference. And the reason I didn't say this before the conference is because I didn't want to actually draw any attention to this horrible man. But before the conference took place, he actually threatened. This is one of Tommy Robinson's leading cheerleaders. And this is why you can't trust Tommy Robinson, because Tommy Robinson talks about people like Antifa. He talks about domestic terrorist groups. He talks about thugs that try to shut him down. But his supporters, one in particular, this horrible Glenn Saffer, before our conference, he was ringing people and texting people, threatening to bring a gang of youths to the event and attack our conference. He wanted to actually attack nationalists and fellow patriots. He describes himself as a patriot. He's not. What kind of man does that? Well, the other day, and I'm leading to something here, this guy, he's not too clever. The other day, he was storming around Asda, screaming and shouting at a store manager, and then demanding to be arrested outside the store for a little bit of cheap publicity and sympathy because he wants to make a name for himself. And I just want to say this. Glenn Saffer is a bully. He's a disgrace. And if Tommy Robinson had any integrity, he would get rid of Glenn Saffer, because any man that threatens a conference, an illegal meeting full of men, women, and children of all, well, not children, we had, well, there was one guy who was under 16 there, so I suppose one child, threatens a meeting full of men, women of all ages with violence, should not be welcome in any nationalist or patriotic group. Disgusting behavior. But this clown was outside Asda the other week getting arrested. And I want to say this, I really, really want to put this down as almost a rule, well, as a rule, as a golden rule, really. Nationalism shouldn't be about cheap stunts. It shouldn't be about begging to get arrested so that you can solicit donations from your followers. It shouldn't be about what appears to be a bad episode of EastEnders or Hollyoaks. It shouldn't be a soap opera. This is a movement to save our people. Now, at this time, and Jason and Colin put up some very good points in the last section. And one thing that was said was people are saying they would die for the economy. Well, that to me is absurd. However, dying for your people is not absurd. Dying for the economy and for GDP, insanity. But dying to protect your people and to ensure they have a homeland and to ensure there's a future for our people and our children, that would be something quite noble. But we're not asking anyone to die for us. I'm not asking anyone to even go out and get arrested. All I'm saying is, let's come together as a community. Let's build something positive and let's shut the door on this period of destructive nationalism and patriotism that revolves around street scuffles, trouble, arrests, endless court cases. And let's get rid of people from our spheres of influence who want to bring violence, trouble, and discord to the community that we're building. This is our chance to do something wonderful. This is our chance to be something better. And I will say this, the people in the Tommy Robinson camp that are threatening women and men at our events, they are no better than Antifa. And when the time comes, I will certainly not be forgetting what they have said and done to try and prevent us from expressing our rights to freedom of speech and freedom of expression. Over to you, Colin. What's your thoughts on this let's get arrested nationalism and the kind of so-called patriots that are desperate to try and silence people like us who are talking about the issue of our age, which is, of course, demographics?
Well, obviously, I'm intending to go to Waitrose and get into a fight as soon as possible so as to get arrested in a futile attempt to sell the nationalist cause to the middle class.
I can just see it later. There's security footage of you with somebody in a headlock fighting over the last avocado.
Avocado nationalism. There is something hilarious about it. And as you say, I every time I hear about this stuff, like Glenn Saffer and so on, I think of the EastEnders, the snare drums, just before the EastEnders theme tune comes in, you know? It's hilarious. But it is it's also serious, because this is just the worst, lowest form of grifting, where you're turning your own life into a sensationalist soap opera. Like, I mean, with Tommy himself, there was the Centre Parks incident, which was kind of fishy. And then, less than 2 weeks later, this thing. And I don't even know whether these were set up or one of them was set up, but it's even if not, it's bad taste. I mean, it's also silly as well. It's not actually addressing the issues. It's getting into a fight with Johnny Foreigner. You know, it's the lowest, it's that sort of lowbrow, and demonizing Muslims without actually addressing, well, why are they here? You know, why have they been allowed to come here? Rather, you're sort of getting into a fight with them once they're here. But then, of course, not insisting that they should leave, not insisting that we should have a homeland of our own. No, you're just saying, well, they commit a lot of crime. Well, I mean, that is a futile thing anyway, because the left can simply reply, well, so do white people. White people commit a lot of crime as well. So what are you talking about? It's a silly... But then again, it's not really supposed to have any success. It's just supposed to raise his profile. And the same with Glenn Saffer, of course, as well. It's just creating a drama that people can buy into and donate to. There's really nothing, there's no long-term plan there at all, other than, of course, to keep his fans, whether it's Glenn or Tommy, to keep his fans from discovering actual real nationalism. Real both in the sense that it's ethno-nationalism, and real in the sense that it will actually get somewhere. You know, their whole thing is just, how can we prevent people from finding something real? Mm. That's all it's about. And in the meantime, grifting and making cheap money from stunts. It's just very low, very bad taste.
Before you speak, Jason, I don't want to cut in here, but I do have to. I forgot to mention this, and it's something that's really, really disgusting. There's a guy called Jack Dawkins. Now, this guy is utter, utter filth. A very good friend of mine, a very dear lady, very important person in our community, one of the speakers at the last Patriotic Alternative Conference. Oh, of course, I'm talking about Dionne Moller. She's incredible, and I love her to bits. She's been such a good friend, and she means an awful lot to me, and I'm sure she means a lot to many people in this community. Well, this horrible Jack Dawkins, and I'd love to see a picture of this fella to see what he actually looks like, because I'm genuinely interested to know what a sicko like Jack actually looks like. Because the other day, one of Dion's pastimes, I'll give you some background on this. One of Dion's pastimes is horse riding, and she has a number of horses. And Jack Dawkins threatened Dion. He threatened her to poison her horses. And then him and his followers sent obscene pictures of severed horses' heads to her. These are the people that we're dealing with. These are the people that Tommy Robinson calls his lieutenants, his captains, the people who are meant to inspire his members, the middle management of his organization. And one of them's coming and threatening to attack our meeting with a gang of youths. And the other is threatening to poison and kill Dion's horses. These people are truly unhinged. I did have that on the show notes actually today, and I just went past it when I was doing this section. So thank you for reminding me, Dion. Jason, what are your thoughts on, not specifically on these threats, but on this kind of let's get arrested nationalism and the stunts that are used by these clowns in order to milk money out of their members?
Well, I mean, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? I mean, this is all about a selfish endeavor of these individuals. There's nothing high or noble. These specific individuals are dregs of society. And those who end up following them and heeding the things that they have to say, they too, some of them will be the dregs of society. They too will be people, for whom a higher calling or a higher cause or morality or ethics or heroism, that none of that means anything to them. They are just the riffraff that want to damage and destroy and maim, and they can only find their participation in society or participation in the creations of others by destroying those things, because there is something defective in such individuals. Now, there are going to be others out there who regrettably are going to be ensnared and by these individuals who are just out there trying to get fame for themselves. Anybody who is trying to just get video, you should immediately call into question anyone who has video of themselves jumping out of their vehicle to shout at a group of people and to potentially get into a fight or to get into a fight. Why would you videotape that? I mean, that's like the guy, make sure the cameras are rolling, mate. Give me a break. That's like the guy at the bar who's talking about how much of a badass he is, and the moment he gets into a fight, he's knocked out. He wants to make sure that he's going to fight somebody that is far weaker and smaller. So anyone who is, it would be completely different if we heard about a scenario where one of our people stood up for one of our weakest members, and we heard about it after the fact, or the video comes in from halfway through or three quarters of the way through the event, and it's done by somebody who's unassociated with the individual who is engaged in the situation. No, when these things are filmed from start to finish, it is clearly an endeavor of self-promotion. And that's how we should see these individuals, as self-promoters. And since they're self-promoters, their objective is not a higher cause, and certainly not the potential sacrifice of themselves and their earning potential. And that is why they choose abstractionists' ideologies. So they become abstractionists themselves, because they know that the anti-white elite, the morality or the ethic of the day, the anti-white morality or ethic of the day, finds it acceptable to embrace an abstractionist ideology. We're all the same, because this is the premise here that the anti-whites hold. This is at the core of anti-whiteism, that everybody is the exact same. It's just an opinion you hold. But everybody, even though they are the exact same, non-whites are a little better in every way, shape, or form. So when it comes down to this sort of thing, it's a question of premise and individuals who are serving their own agenda, and we should identify them as such, and we should be sympathetic to their followers so that we can win them over and bring them into something that is true and high-minded, noble, and heroic. Pass it back.
Well, thank you. It's been a very interesting first half of the show, but we have lots more to come. We are now going to read the super chats and do the entropy questions. There's a couple of things though before I do that. If you haven't contributed, the link is in the chat now. The chat has been put on slow mode by popular appeal because of the amount of people posting. It was going a bit rapidly. And one other thing that I wanted to discuss briefly, actually, I'll discuss this after the first question, because it is a big announcement. We do have a big announcement. Well, firstly, we have a very, very generous super chat. It's £100 from Alt Fit. Thank you very much, my friend. If you want to contact me, you know my email address, and I'll send you a personal thank you. He says, congrats on the conference you recently held. I heard all the speeches and they were all excellent and well received. Our movement is growing due to your hard work. We'll always be there to support you and push for a better future. Please talk about the new dystopian legislation and how we should remain solely vocal in our opposition to this enemy globalist order. Well, thank you for the super chat. We have already discussed that. So I'm sorry, but not sorry because we've already answered your question and we've already discussed the issue of the coronavirus and the new laws that are coming in. But it is nice to hear the conference was so well received. And it was also nice to hear it was a big step up from the first. But we do have another conference planned later in the year. And I do have a bit of a surprise for people tonight, because I'm now going to name one of the guest speakers at that conference. It is going to be his first appearance in public ever. It is going to be his first public speaking engagement ever. It is going to be Morgoth. Morgoth will be speaking live at the next conference. So it is the kind of event you will not want to miss. We want to go from strength to strength, and we have an amazing lineup of speakers. And the first that we're revealing is Morgoth. We're going to drip feed you information on this over the next few months, but I hope everyone's happy with that. I hope you're all as happy with it as I am. The man is a legend. He's produced one of my favorite YouTube videos of all time, The Hatchling. I was talking for the other day saying that phrase has even worked its way into the alternative consciousness. I see leftists now talking rubbish on Twitter and people just giving them a one-word or two-word reply. Okay, Hatchling. Morgoth is an amazing guy. Love him to bits. And I can't wait to meet him in person, have him at our event. So the next super chat is from Serena JB. £3. Thank you very much. Do you think that the coronavirus pandemic will change the public's outlook and make them more skeptical of globalism? We'll answer this very quickly because I think we've already answered it. I'll answer with a simple yes. I justified this earlier. Do you guys agree with that?
Woes.
Sorry. I agree with what?
Do you think the coronavirus? I think we've already answered.
Oh yeah, I think we've already talked about it. Just one thing, just to hark back briefly. I want to say that I just want to back you up on what you said about Dion being harassed in that way. I think it's absolutely disgusting. I wanted to say that before you moved on.
No, I agree. The worst thing as well. I've heard this Saffer on a call with some lady, and he was being so horrible to her as well. I don't understand why these people, we're just not like it. When people like James Goddard and Chris from TR Talks reach out to us, we welcome them and we welcome debate and we welcome chats. We invite people. I went on a chat the other night on Wake Up UK, and a guy came on and he was a little bit skeptical of us. And I said, well, come to the conference, my friend. You know, we welcome people with open arms. I would be appalled if anyone associated with our group was behaving like that. And we're just so different from these plastic money-hungry.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that we show support for each other when one of us is being attacked like that, because there's nothing worse. You know, when you are being attacked like that and you feel like your own side don't have your back, it can be quite scary. So I think we should, you know, unite in opposing that kind of thing. It's horrible. This guy Saffer just seems to be just an awful person. As for the news about the conference, that's great. I'm really glad.
And you're speaking as well, so it's a great lineup. We've got four speakers so far: myself, Woz, Laura, and Morgoth. It's going to be very good. And I just want to agree with everything that Woz said. We are like a shield wall. We're a genuine community. We have to learn from these groups within group preference. You attack one of us, you attack all of us. That is how it works. We stand together. We look after our own. This is something new. we are a genuine nationalist community. Henry Walker gave $3 and said, thank you very much. He said, I like the term white advocacy group as opposed to nationalist to describe PA. Nationalism implies loyalty to the state, which hates us. It also brings to mind low IQ bulldog spitfire nationalism. I'll answer this myself very quickly. That's why one of the things when we came up with PA, we called it Patriotic Alternative. We didn't call it British Nationalism. And we don't have Union Jacks festooned everywhere for a very good reason. In Britain, anyone that's been involved in nationalism for a while will notice that when you knock on doors, if you call yourself a British nationalist, a huge number of people say, hey, that's not for me. I'm Scottish. I'm Welsh. I'm Irish, mate. I'm English. I'm not British. I'm English. And there's been a lot of division in Britain over identity, over whether people identify as British, whether they identify as Scottish, whether they identify as Welsh. And there's an absolutely lovely lady in Yorkshire who's a total gem. She comes to all our events. She's somebody that has been so supportive, so kind, and she always, always has a smile for everyone. She helped with the We Were Never Asked, campaign. She's wonderful. And this lady, when I first spoke to her about nationalism, she said to me, I remember back in the days of the BNP, I didn't join. I always supported them and voted for them, but I didn't join because they were called British. And I've always felt that I'm English. And that is exactly why we've branded Patriotic Alternative in the way we have, because this isn't flag waving spitfire nationalism. This isn't about so much the flag that people stand under. This is about the people who stand under the flag, if you know what I mean. This is about our ethnic group. This is about the preservation of our ethnic groups, the English, the Irish, the Scottish, and the Welsh. And that's why we're making a break with the things in the past that have failed us. So I hope you understand that answer. And people are free to call themselves nationalists, white advocacy groups. I don't have strict rules on what people should be saying, but that is something that we are turning our back on, this bulldog spitfire nationalist rubbish, because it does alienate an awful lot of people. White is the New Green gave $3 Canadian. Thank you very much. And he said, I just sent you an email on Operation Shield. You might want to read it out. I can check my emails. It's quite hard to check emails at the same time as doing this. And I can't see it in my box. It might have gone into spam. So sorry about that. I'll have to come back to that later. Henry Walker gave $3. That's a second $3. Thank you very much. He said, almost every kind of nationalism views another white population as an out-group. Scottish nationalists hate English nationalists. Irish nationalists argue Protestant versus Catholic while they get replaced by non-whites. Exactly, Henry. That's exactly why Patriotic Alternative isn't British. It's not English. It's for our people. It's not about waving little flags and having the Scottish hate the English and the English hate the Scottish and the Protestants hate the Catholics. It's about making sure we don't become a minority. And at this point in the game, when it's this late in the day, it isn't the time for little plastic flags. It's the time for the kind of community that we are building.
Absolutely. Can I just jump in there?
Sure. You're Scottish, mate. You're Scottish. Yeah. So, you know, me and you should be having a fist fight somewhere over a football match that took place 15 years ago or something, according to the...
I'll see you in Waitrose. Well, I mean, yeah, this is stuff that I was saying on my AMA the other day. And I also did a rant about spitfire nationalism. Look, these resentments have a genuine basis, but it's a historical basis, and the time for them is simply over. The circumstances are all completely, radically different now. And if we, you know, we can choose to argue with each other and fight each other and resent each other. But while that happens, we're being encircled by non-whites who are radically different from us and don't care about our conflict and don't distinguish between us. I mean, what does some Somalian care about the distinction between English and Scottish or Scottish and Irish? Northern Irish and Republican, this is all meaningless to them. And they will replace us wholesale. They will replace us without discrimination. So I think this is it. We really have to just get serious and get real about this. These antagonisms are not only no longer relevant, but they're actively harmful. They're actively slowing down a process of solidarity that should be developing at this point, not only within Britain and the nations within Britain, but also between Britain and other countries. An obvious one would be Germany. The other thing about it is I think that there are people who simply live for conflict, who simply enjoy this kind of nonsense. They enjoy infighting. They enjoy the drama, and they don't actually want to win because they don't think seriously in those terms. They think about complaining. They don't think about actually winning. And so their disposition is one of the being disgruntled, being annoyed, being antisocial, and so on. And these are the types that we really just need to sideline as much as possible.
I do really like the idea, though, that I'm in Tesco's browsing for the 2-for-1s on the bargain aisle and the reduced snacks on the freezer department, whereas Woz is casually strolling through Waitrose, gently caressing the avocados and the pomegranates. He really is a cut above. Do you have anything to add on this, Jason?
Well, I mean, this is the wheelhouse over here about this is all about our biosphere, which is the same wherever we are as Westman. It is the exact same. And we need to leave this old nationalism behind, the nationalism that divides us and that has been defeated by the anti-whites time and again, driving us against each other in sanguinary conclusions. So that's about all I'll add.
Oh, there was one other thing I wanted to say, which is that I have a sock account on Twitter. And earlier today, I was just talking about PA, and some Tommy supporters chimed in and tried to create a schism regarding PA and the Northern Ireland question. And it interested me so much because I looked into them and it was like three or four different people, and they were all of a certain early life disposition. And it's just astonishing. It's astonishing how many people in the Tommy community are not European, are not British. It really is incredible. And it was also interesting to see how they zeroed in on something that they could use to create a schism, that they could use to, like, PA apparently must have a policy on Northern Ireland. Why? I mean, why? This is nonsense. Well, it's not irrelevant, of course, but to our cause, it is irrelevant. That this is not what we need to be talking about. That's something that for the Irish to sort out. This is not something that is some sort of critical problem with PA, but they were trying to. They were pretending that it was, and that interested me very much as a sort of dishonest debating tactic.
Oh, it is. I've heard this before. They rally on different points like, oh, well, unless you've got a full policy for Northern Ireland, no one's going to vote for you. In all my years of knocking on doors on the mainland, I was never confronted by anyone who said, what's your policy on Northern Ireland? I spoke to lots of people who were very concerned about grooming gangs. I spoke to lots of people who were concerned about mosques being built. I spoke to lots of people who were concerned about immigration, the EU demographics, but never once did anyone say to me, what's your policy on Ulster? And I think that it's also very telling of the nationalist mindset that a lot of people, rather than going for these very, very big points that people can see, immigration, demographics, they will focus on things that are very, very important to them, but to the wider populace are in some ways absolutely invisible. And ultimately, what the people of Ireland and Northern Ireland choose to do in terms of whether they unite, whether they stay separate, how they arrange their political future, ultimately it's up to them. My goal is to ensure that the people of Northern Ireland and the people of Ireland are not demographically replaced. That is my primary goal. And all things to do with Ireland and Northern Ireland are frankly secondary to that at the moment. Because let's face it, if Ulster is taken back and becomes part of Ireland, or if Ulster remains forever British, it won't matter if the people living in Ulster are all Somalians, Nigerians, Afghans, and Syrians, will it? It'll be kind of irrelevant. Again, it's not so much the flag that counts, but the people standing under the flag. And PA, yet again, our primary concern is those people, not the piece of cloth flying above them. So St. Harrison gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, good to see you three last week. I'm here to shamelessly plug my nationalist video competition and let you all know I am 200 away from the magic 1,000 subscribers. Yes, St. Harrison has a video competition. You should have really put a link to your channel in, mate. I could have given it out. If you send me a PM, I'll do that now. Henry Walker gave another $3. Thank you very much. He said, English nationalism has a subconscious anti-German sentiment and celebrates the victory of World War II. Nationalism is an unappealing description. Indigenous advocacy group is more accurate. Thank you. We have discussed that now quite extensively. Becky T gave £5. Thank you very much. I work for a luxury lawnmower brand in Northeast England. They consider themselves essential to the economy and that staff are safer at work. What about when the staff go home? Well, I'm not really sure what I can say to that. I think some companies obviously do need to stay open. I'm not really sure whether a luxury lawnmower brand is essential, but I do want to say a big thank you to all those working in hospitals, working in pharmacies, working in doctor's surgeries. And also, I know people are saying the same as me. I know a lot of people are talking about the bravery of medical staff at the moment, and that certainly shouldn't be downplayed, but there are people still going out and working in Tesco's and Waitrose. I know we've had a laugh about what might happen if me and Colin met in a supermarket, but let's face it. I was in Tesco's this morning, picking up the things I needed for today. And there was a very cheerful, fresh-faced girl who I see in there quite often. And she was doing the early shift working on the tills. And I was chatting to her as I was packing my bag. And she sat there with her blue gloves on, because obviously they have to wear gloves now. She didn't have a face mask on or anything, but she's literally putting herself in front of hundreds, if not thousands, of people every day. And that's quite a brave thing to do. But if she decided not to, and all the other workers at Tesco, Sainsbury's, Waitrose, etc., all decided not to, we'd be in a right mess. So I think when we are saying thank you to people, we should be thanking those who are working in supermarkets, who are working in grocery stores, and haven't just run and hidden, because if it wasn't for them, people would be starving pretty soon. But what do you guys think about the luxury lawnmower company? Should they be sending their workers home, or should people be forced to keep on selling the luxury lawnmowers? What do you think, Colin?
Well, you know, I just ordered something on Amazon for my camera so that I can get good footage. And a sort of Steadicam thing. So it would be hypocritical for me to say that I don't think Amazon workers should be working during the lockdown. But realistically, obviously, obviously as many people should be in at home as possible. Luxury lawnmowers, obviously no one needs that. It's, I don't really need this camera thing. You know, it's just something that it's, I guess, selfish of me. But either way, it will arrive when it arrives, maybe a month from now. This, I don't really have anything to say about this. I think it's just people. See, one thing I can see coming from this is a demand for more automation, because people are going to, in the aftermath of this, people are going to be thinking, well, so many people couldn't go into work. So many things came to a standstill as a result. Do these jobs really need to be done by human beings? And the fact is, a lot of them probably don't. You know, in this day and age, you could probably automate even more. And I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying it's probably inevitable, especially as a result of this. And then the other thing that's probably inevitable as a result of this is people working from home. That's another one of these transitions that's been on the way for decades and is increasing all the time. But I think it will be accelerated by this. Well, there will probably be a big call for people realizing, well, I don't actually need to do that tedious commute twice a day because I was able to work from home perfectly well. So that I think that's going to, I really think there probably are going to be long-term and cultural social effects from all of this.
Thank you. What do you think, Jason? Have you ordered your luxury lawnmower?
I'm riding on it right now. That's how luxury it is. It is silent. I'm cutting the grass. Nobody is even aware. I take care of two things at once. So feed two birds with one seed, as we say here in Virginia as an animal lover. No, my position is that the governments are taking appropriate steps when it comes to slowing down the spread of a novel disease. So even if this disease didn't do things like attack organs and damage people's organs, even if it didn't do things like kill or have a high mortality rate for the elderly, extremely high for the elderly, even if it didn't do that, if it did just knock people out for 15 to 20 days with flu-like symptoms that were miserable beyond belief, and nobody had a natural immunity to it, and there were no immunizations against it, the governments would have to do this social distancing policy. They would have to shut things down so that everybody wouldn't get it at once. So it is a sensible thing for a government to do. Now, it can be done in hotspots rather than the totality of a country. There's no need necessarily to say that an area where there isn't a single case needs to be shut down. That is going too far. And in those places, I think the business owners and the market demand should determine whether or not the people end up going to work. Essential businesses, obviously, we need folks to be out there doing things like selling the groceries. And these people in the States are increasingly being rewarded with giant bonuses and this sort of thing, as you might imagine, to placate them, because they are going to have a lot of angst, a lot of fear about coming into contact with so much of the population. But just take a look at this. I just noticed this article, and I'll pass it right back. This is about doctors across the West. And we know, if you have been to the doctor in the past few years, and these are an essential service. So we need the doctors to be in place. If you know, they are increasingly from foreign lands. And we are seeing now increasingly that they are writing fraudulent prescriptions for themselves and their family members for the drugs that are needed by our elderly primarily, but certainly all of us, Z-Packs and chloroquine right now. They are writing fraudulent prescriptions and therefore making it hard for our people who have the disease, who are actually in need to get a hold of these medications. So just another example of how this anti-white dystopian society that has been forced upon us is undermining everything about who and what we are, our well-being. So as far as the luxury lawnmowers go, mine's running beautifully, and I will pass it back.
Thank you very much. And just for the record, I have a non-luxury lawnmower, and I really hate gardening. it's not my thing. Defeat Apathy gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, let's use the lockdown as a time for self-improvement, read books, lift weights, learn a new skill, come out of it a stronger person. Thank you very much, my friend. Auto Nature gave £10. Thank you very much. And he said, the most important thing with maintaining a habit at times like these is to keep your momentum up. Don't let your mind make the excuses that you're powerless. If your gym is closed, do 30 minutes of yoga or calisthenics on your bedroom floor. Keep reading, meditating, and hail victory. Thank you very much, my friend. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Tommy Robinson is Jerry Springer nationalism. That's so true. Marty Morosley gave £10. Thank you very much. He said, Mark, can we have an update on the current status of PA's organization, the website, the application progress with the EC? Will there be a PA YouTube channel? I'm very interested in supporting you on PA. Big shout out to my boy PWG and to Big Wozy also. I think he meant to say NWG. And Big Wozy also. Marty, yes, I'll give you a very quick update on this, but I'll give you better news than you were expecting. Myself and Laura are doing a special stream on the state of PA on Friday. The website is almost finished, but it'll be the first ever nationalist website that doesn't have a donation button. So take that as you will. I think you can realize by now that we're the real deal and not grifters. YouTube channel for PA, not planned at the moment. Application process in hell with the EC. But we will talk a lot more about that on Friday. So tune in and all your questions will be answered then. Marty Morosi gave another £5. Thank you very much. Thoughts on Marine Le Pen and the Front National rally? I don't know what you want me to say about this. I haven't seen anything about this. Have you guys seen anything about the Front National rally or why it is newsworthy? Colin or Jason?
No, I haven't.
I did see something, a photo of Marine Le Pen, or Marianne Le Pen, but I don't know what it was referring to.
Okay, sorry about that. We can't answer the question. If somebody gives us some context sometimes when they ask these questions, because if I miss the context, I don't really understand what it's about. A Tall Kevin, 87, gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, Mark, what do you call American supporters of the patriotic alternative? We obviously can't vote in England, but we still have the same interests in regards to our people. Do you classify Jason and myself as associates or supporters? Well, we class you as part of our extended family. You're welcome to come to events. It would be great to see you. You're welcome to sign up. You can come to conferences. You can stay up to date with us. You can watch the shows. And one day, look, patriotic alternative doesn't have a great big Union Jack front and center. It could quite easily be franchised to Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada. One day, wouldn't it be amazing to have branches of patriotic alternative in every English speaking country in the world? That really would be something. That really would be an international family of people of European descent and something I'd very much like to see. Emperor is Dead gave £3 and he said, I work in the supermarket sector and this is probably the first time I have ever heard someone saying thank you for doing their job. No problem, my friend. Keep up the good work, stay safe. And believe me, if it wasn't for you guys, the country would be in absolute chaos by now. I know the medical professionals are doing amazing work to keep things going, but let's face it, there are far fewer people with coronavirus than there are people who need to eat. If the food supply was cut off and supermarkets were gone, there truly would be chaos. And I think we would see absolutely huge riots, civil unrest, and maybe even a greater loss of life than we will see from the coronavirus itself. So thank you for your work. And AltFit gave another £5. Thank you very much for the generosity, my friend. He said, the tribalism of foreign cultures is causing severe disruption to our society. The solution to mass immigration has to be mass deportation. I think we all agree with that. So I don't think there's going to be any disagreement with that. Thank you very much for the donation. Somebody said the Front National rally is now called the National rally. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what I can say about that. Now we have questions. Remember, with Entropy, you don't just have to donate. You can ask questions and you can vote on the best questions. And the best questions get asked every week. So the first question is from our good friend Unwashed. And not only has he got the highest voted question, but our good friend Unwashed is going live after this stream with the amazing Keith Wood. So at 9 p.m., make sure you are over on Unwashed's channel to see him discuss the current state of affairs with Keith Woods. Get even more nationalism tonight with those two superb people. But he asks, can we discuss Turning Point UK's activities today with regards to Harry TR UK? Yes, our good young friend Harry from TR UK went to a Turning Point UK event and he groiped them. He asked the demographic question and they thought they'd made a bit of a fool of him, but within 5 minutes of their video being up they had removed it due to the negative reaction. Have you seen this, Colin? Have you seen this, Jason?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I've seen it. You're right. Okay, hold on a sec. this was Daniel Hannan, who I remember seeing like 10 years ago when I was just getting into this stuff. And he was a fan of, he was friends with Theodore Dalrymple, a writer who was a big intellectual influence on me. And I remember hearing a big discussion that they did, like an hour and a half long, back in 2010, sometime around then. And it was, you know, Daniel Hannan was quite an influence on me in a way. He was also writing for the Daily Telegraph back then at the time. So that was a big thing. You know, the Daily Telegraph blogs, Morgoth and I met each other, or I first encountered Morgoth on the Telegraph blogs. So Daniel Hannan's been around and relevant to me for quite a long time. And so, but of course, as often happens, you outgrow these people. And he, at this point, just seems like a complete and utter shill to me. He's one of these British people who go over to America and tell right-wing Americans exactly what they want to hear, namely that the NHS is this terrible monstrosity. I think he actually said it was a 50-year mistake. And I'm not even a huge, massive fan of the NHS, but I don't think it's a 50-year mistake. I don't think it's a monstrosity. I don't think it's a farce. I quite like it. I quite like it. And I think it's a good, it's a perfectly good achievement. So it annoys me at any rate when Brits go over to America and just sell out their own country like that. And Daniel Hannan is this kind of guy. He's basically a neocon. He's pro mass immigration, and he's colorblind. He doesn't see race, doesn't think it matters. To an extent, he's even pro multiculturalism, because he clearly doesn't really care about preserving Britain's culture, because he says in that very clip that, you know, every immigrant brings something new. So, and we know what they bring, and we know the quantities in which they bring it. So he's not talking about, oh, this rare spice, this rare variant of paprika that this immigrant brings. No, he's talking about huge cultural change, and he's approving of it. Now, so basically, this is a guy who thinks that British values, he's sort of like the more academic, more intellectual Sargon. He thinks that British values will see us through and have always seen us through. And they'll even see us through when we don't even exist anymore, because they'll see our replacements through. And that's wonderful. It doesn't matter that we won't exist, because the values will exist. Now, this is the kind of utter bullshit patriotism that we have outgrown and that we need everyone to outgrow. And the people who will try to stop everyone from outgrowing it are people like Daniel Hannan. And you saw this in that clip from Turning Point UK. Turning Point, of course, itself is an utter shell operation, just a total waste of everyone's time, simply designed, like other people we could name, simply designed to prevent people from discovering real nationalism. Turning Point UK is a huge distraction. And Daniel Hannan, I'm afraid to say, fits right into it, because he's only too happy to go along with this dishonesty. He's been doing it for 10 years. So when he was presented with that question, his initial answer was no, he doesn't believe that this is happening deliberately. Well, I mean, how stupid or dishonest would you have to be to say that this isn't happening deliberately? Of course it's happening deliberately. Of course it's manufactured. Of course the native British people are vilified when they object to it, and always have been ever since Enoch Powell's speech, or even before then. So he first said it wasn't happening deliberately, and then he said that it's not a problem anyway, because all we need to do is persist with the value, persevere with our values, and we will overcome the massive numbers of non-whites who don't have any, who don't identify at all with these values, and somehow we'll persuade them off them. Well, you know, I'm not interested in persuading non-whites of these values, because I don't want them to stay here. I don't care how much we can integrate them. I don't want to integrate them. I want them to leave. But I also think at any rate that it's impossible anyway to persuade them of these values, because they're here in such numbers now that they will not do that. They have no reason to subscribe to British values. And then, of course, the third level of how farcical this all is that no one can even tell me what British values are. No one knows. You ask them, they can't tell you. So it's all just a load of nonsense. I'll keep it polite and just leave it at that. Just say that, yeah, Daniel Hannan has been disappointing me for 10 years, and he continued with that clip. There we go.
He is a complete and utter... He's just so wet, isn't he? The funny thing about all of this as well is it's such a Sargon argument, isn't it? We'll teach them our values. How's that been working out? Because if we have failed up to this point with the relatively small number that have come here, if to this point we haven't managed to teach those already here, how are we going to teach those already here, plus the millions more that are coming, and the children of those who are already here that live in their enclaves, don't speak our language, are homeschooled or schooled in the local mosque, or simply don't go to school and instead roam the estate? It's not working. It has never worked. And if it hasn't worked with smaller numbers, it's certainly not going to work with larger numbers. These people are so disingenuous and so cowardly, so absolutely cowardly. Whenever these issues are brought up, they fold straight away because they're so fearful of being called racist, and not just by leftists, but by their own people. They're so desperate to play within the establishment's required rules that they'll never, ever win. And Turning Point USA and Turning Point UK are the most despicable, sad group imaginable. And Harry, today you are fantastic, my friend. We've got you on the show in about 3 weeks, and I'm very, very much looking forward to having you on. Jason, do you know about this? And if so, would you like to comment?
I don't know about it, but I do have a comment, because it's just to say that the premise here that such individuals approach this with is entirely incorrect. It is, values are a function of a people's biospirit, and that's why we see the same sort of values out of white people wherever they are, the same sort of values out of black people wherever they are, and it holds true for the rest of the races on Earth. So you do have a situation where you have what we refer to in Going Free as numerical diffidence. And when a people are in your land, an alien people are in your land, in our lands, wherever that might be, and they are fearful because they are vastly outnumbered by our people, then they do as best they can to imitate what are our values, our norms, our customs. However, as they approach what we refer to as numerical courage, they begin to project their biosphere, meaning their values, their culture, onto our environments. So this idea that you could teach them to be white is utterly absurd, and it has proven to be a falsehood from the beginning of this effort. And this is all we need to point to. And in fact, it is the most powerful of arguments, because there is no surmounting the reality of this position. Once you accept the genuine premise that different peoples, different instincts, therefore different values, then you certainly cannot arrive at a conclusion where by simply teaching them a different set of values, you will perpetuate your set of values. And furthermore, how absolutely reprobate and immoral to believe that what matters is the ideas of a people, but not the people who create the ideas, that you would sacrifice their spirit and flesh on the altar of the ideas that come out of that spirit and flesh, is truly reprobate and immoral. And anyone holding such a position is anti-white and immoral. You then have the moral high ground in that argument. Pass it back, brother.
Thank you. The next question is from Connor Chickmeister, who says, do you think the anti-white globalists in the UK government are going to use COVID-19 as an excuse to subtly erode our rights? I think we've already covered this, but my answer was yes. To Colin, Jason, do you want to say anything more about that?
Woz?
Oh, I'm sorry, what was the question? Sorry, I was responding to someone in the live chat.
Connor Chickmeister said, do you think the anti-white globalists in the UK government are going to use COVID-19 as an excuse to subtly erode our rights? We discussed this earlier, and I said I think they will, especially a move to the cashless society.
It only makes sense that they will use this to their own advantage, or attempt to. It only makes sense that they will try to do that. So, of course, yes, there will be moves to do that. I mean, the cashless society is something that just... I really don't like it for the reason you said earlier, Jason, that it means that everything will be trackable. And I don't like that. I like the fact that cash is anonymous. You know, it's just the stuff that you hand around to people and you get something in return. I like the innocence and simplicity of that. And but yeah, I suspect that's something that they'll go after. There could be all sorts of effects, as we were talking about earlier. But yeah, I think it only makes sense that the people in charge will try to use every disaster to their own advantage.
And I echo that. We can proceed, sir.
Yeah, I think we covered that a lot earlier, so thank you for the question. Son of Britain said, how long do you give it until we have enough cultural influence to really change the normie mindset to our ideals? Well, this is a slow burn, and I have an answer to this question, but it's not going to be as quick as many people would like. The first thing that we need to do with Patriotic Alternative is win the ideological battle on the right, and we're doing that. The fact that Paul Golding is streaming as we speak, Paul Golding is streaming at the moment with his partner Ashley, and they are talking about demographics. Now, he wouldn't have talked about demographics ever before, and in the history of Britain First, he's never really approached demographics. He's talked a little bit about immigration, but he's never talked about demographics. The first thing we must do is unite everyone on the patriotic right under the banner of demographics. Get everyone speaking about it. And once we've won that battle, we can extend what we're doing into the real world. I mean, we already are extending what we're doing into the real world. And the way we do that is the way that people like Harry today went out and did that. Getting people talking, getting people having conversations. Things like the We Were Never Asked campaign. People are aware of this. They want to speak about it. They need the strength to speak about it. And we're going to give them the strength to do that. First, we're going to win the ideological battle on our ground. We're going to unite people on the right under this banner. And we're going to get everyone talking about demographics. And then when everyone's talking about demographics, rather than going to the public and talking about the economy, talking about whether we're going to raise tax by half a pence here and there, or whether we're going to raise benefits by 2p, or, you know, reduce booze duty by a penny or freeze it for 5 years. We're going to talk about things that really matter, that really have an effect, and that is demographics. And it's a multi-stage plan, and I think you can all see how far along we are already. And the fact that what I'm saying is actually working. People are talking about our issues. People are sick of just hearing about another demo about Islam, when the elephant in the room is we are going to be a minority by the 2060s. And I think once we've united people, once we've built this community, taking the message to the public will happen very swiftly, very effectively. And that is the final part in this, because one thing, and this is something that myself and Laura will be talking about on Friday, one thing that we've always failed to do, we've built this online community where we talk amongst ourselves and gently pull people over. But there are millions of people all over Britain tonight, sat in their own homes, who think about demographics, who talk about demographics, who are concerned about demographics. And when we start dropping leaflets, when we start going out on the streets, we are going to connect millions of normal people with our united community that is all singing from the same hymn sheet and all talking about demographic replacement. Do you guys have anything to add to that?
Oh, I think that you're absolutely right, that we just need to, for now, we just need to make this a talking point that everyone is aware of. We need to get that. We need to popularize this, because a lot of the public, A, don't know it's happening, or B, don't know the significance of it happening. Like, they're still at the Sivnat stage of thinking, well, it doesn't really matter if things change. Everything changes, right? And, well, it was always multiracial anyway. These drivelly things that they've been told by the mainstream media. So we need to, as I've said before, we need to change the culture. And one very tangible way in which we need to change the culture is, because a lot of it will be nebulous and you know, abstract stuff. But a lot of very tangible way we need to change the culture is to increase people's awareness of ethnic identity. That, namely, the fact that they have an ethnic identity. Because a lot of white people actually have that thing, that idea that's imported from America, that whites don't have an identity. Whites don't have a culture. You know, I actually hear British people saying this now, that, you know, young idiots at university, and I say that disparagingly perhaps, but it does infuriate me sometimes how gullible the young are. They've been told that immigrants bring culture to Britain, and before them there really wasn't anything. Now, this is a absolutely outrageous claim that is totally false, but they believe it. So we've got to combat that stuff, because until we have, trying to make gain political traction, I think, will be futile, because they're not primed. The public are not primed for this kind of thinking, and we need to make them primed for this kind of thinking. And then the political stuff will be much, much easier.
I concur with both of you, and we can move on to the next question, brother.
Well, we have another super chat from Charlie McKay Moffitt, £3. Thank you very much. And he said, thoughts on the idea of a Kanzuk union? Does anyone have any thoughts on that idea?
All I know is that means with Canada, but I don't know what else it means. Does that mean, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and Britain? Yes. But I don't see any reason not to, except that, I mean, again, this comes back to ethnicity, you know, because I think that there should be as much cooperation and fellow feeling between white nations as possible. And as much as the Australian gene pool is no longer purely British, and as much as Canada has definitely changed and New Zealand as well, they're still white, and we can still identify with them in that sense. And we must. So, yeah, I think that that's a good idea. I think that in a similar way, the Visegrad Union in Eastern Europe is a good idea. All of these things are good ideas, especially because they help us to undermine the EU, which is completely dead against this kind of thing. So, yeah, I think so.
I think we should definitely all be working together. I think there should be more cooperation between these different nations and the people of these nations. You know, we should be able to trade, we should be able to travel. And obviously we all share similar problems. So yes, working together is important. Do you have anything to add to that, Jason?
No, I mean, specifically, if it comes down to, if it's just a thought to discuss an intellectual exercise, then I'm good with that sort of intellectual exercise. But when it comes down to a position to take in a conversation or a position for an organizational entity to take, then you get into a conversational scenario that you can really be dismembered. So this sort of thing can be, I guess, productive in some areas, but very unproductive in others when it comes to advancing white well-being.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Because if a Kanzuk union happened and was on a civic nationalist basis, then we'd be saying that it's fine for all these Chinese people in Australia and Canada to migrate over to Britain because they're as British as anyone else, or they're as Anglospherical as anyone else. But of course, we all know that, of course, they're not. One thing that it just seems ridiculous to me is how difficult it is for white people to move between white countries, when you consider that non-whites are just allowed in massive numbers, and yet the state puts up huge barriers to someone moving from America to Britain, or Canada to Britain, or Britain to America, whatever. This is crazy. This is obviously just an anti-white situation that has been allowed to develop.
No, I agree. I've always found that very odd as well, that if somebody seems to go to another country, let's say like Africa or Somalia or Nigeria, some African country, some old woman who's a little bit horny and has realized she's sort of passed her sell-by date. So she ends up in Nigeria cruising the bars and clubs looking for a young black man who she's going to marry and offer a British passport to. these men fall over themselves for these old women. And it seems like the British government fall over themselves to accommodate these marriages and to help these young men who clearly are only marrying these women for the passport to get into Britain. There doesn't seem to be any large blocks to people doing things like that. Yet I would wager that had I gone to America, met a white American girl and wanted to bring her back to Britain as my wife, there would have been far more checks, far more obstacles, far more tripwires placed in front of me.
Absolutely.
And it just, it's so strange. It's not just these people. This is the thing. There's often this misunderstanding that these people are race blind, that they don't understand race, that the governments sort of are getting things wrong. Come on, guys. Far more similar to us than she is than that Nigerian guy that old woman wants to bring in. And on one hand, that might be your initial thoughts, that there's some race blindness, but it's not race blindness. These people aren't blind to race. They understand race, and they are erecting this system. They're building this system because they are aware of race, and they're aware of race, and they hate us because of our race. So they're allowing these Nigerians in before they allow the pretty, nice girl, white girl from the American Midwest, because they want to replace us.
And again, I'm sorry to say this word again, but it's so disgusting. You know, people are quoting me like the Sebastian Gorka thing. Apparently I say it in a similar way to him. Sorry. But it is disgusting that they would try to thwart relationships, friendships between white people. And meantime, they're bringing in as many Africans as they can. I mean, this is just, it's just perverse. Yeah. You know, and yeah, you're, of course, it's happening deliberately. It's not some kind of accident. One part of it is, I think, and, you know, this isn't so much the reason anymore, but I think it started in this way because white people simply obey rules far more. I mean, they will try to go through the proper channels and, cross the I's and dot the I's and cross the T's. They'll do all of that. Whereas a lot of people from the third world will simply not give a toss. So that's part of it. But obviously at this point, there is a huge political impetus towards thwarting relationships between white people in different countries. Mm-hmm. And I think it's sickening. You know, there are real differences, tangible differences between whites from different countries. That's because of acculturation, I think, because of the way you're raised, the cultural references that you're raised with, yes. But at the same time, you can easily identify with and you know, have a girlfriend from another country. It happens very easily. It happens very naturally. There isn't this barrier. And I think it's, as I say, sickening that the authorities get in the way of this happening.
I just want to add something here. And again, this is something, it's not just pushed by the system, it's pushed by these moronic conservatives, people like Daniel Hannum. They would argue that they would rather have somebody who was completely racially different to us, somebody from an African country who was part of the Commonwealth. They would rather a white woman married a black man who was from a Commonwealth country, and he would have more claim to Britain and he'd be more British than, say, if myself or Colin had gone to, you know, the Ukraine or Poland and met a beautiful white Christian girl and brought her back here. They would have more problem with us dating somebody of our own race from Eastern Europe than they would have with a woman meeting somebody in Africa, who is completely different, completely culturally different to us, and bringing him back. And again, it's not just the state, it's not just the left doing this. I remember when Nigel Farage said that he wanted to stop Eastern European immigration into Britain so he could help facilitate more non-white immigration from the Commonwealth, because those people had a greater claim to being British. Absolutely absurd and just so out of touch.
I'm not gonna Gorka again, but it is sickening. How on earth could somebody say that and seriously mean it? Does anyone, I mean, what do we think? Nigel Farage actually believes that? Maybe he does. I don't know.
Well, I'm not going into it now because we've got 15 seconds left of the show, but people have to remember there's been a bit of debate about World War II, which was obviously a disaster for the European people. And Churchill and the British were definitely didn't do the right thing. They didn't do the right thing. They took us into a war which was absolutely fratricidal. It was insane. But not only was it insane, but when we won, what followed was the collapse of the British Empire. And when the British Empire collapsed, it almost was like a sun collapsing. And when a sun collapses, it creates a black hole which sucks everything in around it. And as the British Empire collapsed, there was almost like a black hole at the center of the British Empire. And it pulled in people from all of the former colonies. And that has done absolute damage to our ethnic makeup, to our culture, to our nation, to our cities. And to claim that just because these people happened to be colonized by us at one time, that they now have some kind of ancestral claim to our soil and to come here and live alongside us, is one of the greatest and most damaging lies I've ever heard. And it's a lie that is perpetuated mainly by so-called conservatives.
Well, I mean, just look at Ash Sarkar. She has more of a claim to Britain than some nice girl from Sweden. No, sorry, I don't think so. I really don't think so.
No, I agree. Well, look, we're going to have to wrap this up now, guys, because we're over time. We've got one last super chat. Straight white British Protestant gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, if Gary Young is British, he should apologise for the British Empire.
Oh, yeah. That was my thing back in the day. I'll take credit for that.
That's one good laugh. So look, as we wrap up, we're gonna have to be quick. Colin, amazing having you on. I hope you'll come again. Can't wait to see you at the next conference. Give yourself a quick outro. Where can we find you, and what will you be up to in the next few days?
Well, someone asked about BitChute. I am trying to update that. I need to wait for them to publish a load of like huge bulk of my old videos before I know which ones need to be published. So that's why there's nothing going up on BitChute just now. I am doing the weekly AMA Sundays at 10 p.m. GMT. You can find me on Telegram, just Millennial Woes. And I've got the YouTube channel, for now at least, and I've got the MW Live channel. That's where the AMAs happen. So thank you very much. And if you're in doubt, you can also go to millennialwoes.com, and all of this is linked from there. So thank you.
Thank you. Jason, who's on tap and where can we find you? But super quickly, because we have 2.5 minutes left.
NoWhiteGuilt.org, the afterparty.tv. Tonight, Jared George and I are on After Hours on my channel at 8 p.m. on Friday. Tap will be Laura Lee, and we'll get you the information about time as soon as possible. It's been magnificent to speak again with Woes and all of you wonderful people in the chat, and I pass it back to Mark.
Thank you very much. Well, that about wraps up the show. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, No White Guilt. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. If you want to donate after the show, please donate via Bitcoin or write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I will be able to give you other ways to donate, and you can contact me there if you need me. Next week, we have Daughter of Albion on the show. On Friday, I am with Dangerfield for a chat about politics. And after this show, we have Unwashed with Keith Woods. They should be starting now. Remember, we weren't just live on YouTube. We were also live on RadioAlbion.com. Please support Sven Longshanks and Radio Albion. It has been a great show. We have had great guests. I am back on Friday with the lovely Laura Teller to discuss all your questions about Patriotic Alternative. And that just leaves me to say thank you so much. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to the very, very generous donors. And thank you to all of the people in the chat. This community is exactly what we are doing this for. I love you all. Stay safe and make sure you are very, very vigilant during these trying times. Look after yourselves. And I can't wait to see you again. Same time next week.